yourself a glass, sit for a spell. It's time to have some fun. Let's do a little thinking, some picking and a drinking. But this is what we're drinking with Dan Dunn.
Welcome to What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn. I am Dan Dunn, and man, has this been a week. I feel like I say that every week, but this, in a series of weeks that have been weeks, this one's been a tough week. I got ready to do this show, and I was very happy that we're getting to do the show because I was like, you know what? I fucking need a drink right now. And good news is I've got wine. I've got plenty of wine. And even better news is that I've got an old friend on the show to drink wine with me to douse the burning flames of anguish that burn. No, I'm kidding. You know what? It's going to be okay. We're going to drink, though. She is an actor who has appeared in numerous fantastic projects. You've probably seen her in Miracle Workers, the Dead Girls Detective Agency, HBO's Love Life, the acclaimed series Love Life, produced by Paul Feig, who's been on this very show, and a great Netflix film that called Uncorked. And I'm going to say under the radar because I hadn't heard of it until I was getting ready for this, and I watched, and it's such a great, I'm so glad, because I love that movie, and she was fantastic in it. Welcome to the show, Sasha Compare. Hi.
Hello. Hello. And I do want to say Uncorked was number one on Netflix the first weekend it came out.
Was it?
That was, yeah.
How did I miss, I'm the author of American Wino, and I missed that movie.
Well, it also came out, like, the week after the whole pandemic started. So I feel like people were either drinking themselves, you know, silly, or watching a shit ton of Netflix. And then, you know, it's a great movie, but also the timing, I'll tell you, it's wild because we were supposed to go to South by Southwest with that film. And obviously the whole thing got canceled. So as it was coming out, we were like, oh my God, no one's gonna know. But it was almost, like, I don't want to say lucky, but it was almost lucky that everybody was at home with nowhere to go. And the film's amazing and worth a watch. And it got so many great eyeballs on it and press and whatnot. I'm happy that people saw it because Prentice put so much work into that.
Well,
and it was dope.
I want to raise a toast, and we're going to get into the movie in a second. The wine we're drinking today is called Love Block. It's from New Zealand. And Sasha and I right now, we're starting off with some Sauvignon Blanc, okay? And we're going to talk about this Sauvignon Blanc in way more detail, but this is a 2019 Sauvignon Blanc from Love Block, and cheers again. Once again, cha-ching, there we go, boom. All right, so Uncorked is about a young man whose family owns a barbecue restaurant in Memphis, Tennessee. And yeah, it's a restaurant that was started by his grandfather, and then his father ran it, and his father's expecting him to run it, but he's got a different dream, and his dream is to be a master sommelier. And also in the show, we're going to get into what that entails. It is arguably the most difficult test in the entire world. And Sasha plays, his name's Elijah, the character, and Sasha plays Tanya, who is his, he meets her, they meet cute in the wine shop where he works. They hit it off, and she ends up becoming sort of the impetus, the one who really encourages him to go for it and take that test. So it's a classic story. He's being pulled in one direction. His father wants him to take over the family business. He's got a different dream, and it just goes. But it's so well written. The acting, you're stupendous in it, really fantastic.
Yeah.
And I just really love the movie. I really did. It's in terms of wine movies that have been made, it's hit or miss. You know, it's really hit or miss with these. And this was definitely a hit.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I don't even know that many that focus this much in depth on the sommelier world, you know, because what I can think back to is Sideways, which is kind of just, you know, traversing up the coast. But you don't usually see a sommelier story, and you usually don't see it from an African American perspective.
Absolutely. And that, yeah. The film reference that I would recommend anybody go to would be the documentary Somm.
Which is
the world that he's that's the test he's trying to pass. You're absolutely right. It's a barbecue restaurant in Memphis. It's an African American family. The reality is African Americans are woefully underrepresented in the wine world, not just African Americans, black people in general around the world are woefully underrepresented in the wine world, but that's changing. It really is changing. And I think that's, because of movies like Somm, where there, I can't remember his name. I've met him numerous.
Dylan,
that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
brother's one of the producers on the movie, and they went to him for part of the story. So, Elijah is essentially Dylan in a sense, going through his first iteration.
And I don't want to give it. Yeah, I don't want to give away. I almost gave it away a second ago. I almost said, but I won't. I would say this: watch the movie. It's on Netflix. It's great. It was a really significant role in that film as well. And then when we'll come back to that, because I have a bunch of wine stuff I want to talk to you about. Love Life. Let's talk about that. I mean, that was a big, big hit on HBO, right?
Yeah. It was huge, and it was so crazy because it's this time is so hard for things to premiere. You never know what people are going to gravitate towards. And with billboard marketing and whatnot, it's hard because people aren't driving much. But that show, I'm so happy it came out when it came out, because it was a time where people needed to sort of see something relatable and uplifting. And it was so much fun. Anna Kendrick. Wow. Wow.
She's amazing. And you play one of her inner circle. Part of the group of her inner circle of friends.
Yeah. I play Mallory. We live together, and it follows over 10 years, mostly Darby, played by Anna, her story of sort of finding love, but like really the impetus is you got to find yourself before you can love someone else. And Mallory's character, she's a little less on the whole cutesy emotional relationship scale. There's also Sarah, played by Zoe Chow, who's fantastic. Our other roommate, who is in a 5-year relationship or, a long-term relationship, and it's sort of crumbling. So you see us each at different places on the relationship scale. And I'm just trying to my character is sort of trying to support Darby, support Anna's character, but also, she's just like, why is this so important to you? You're fine the way that you are, do your thing. And then you see, things happen for Mallory and throughout the end, but it was great. I mean, it was a great experience. We shot that in New York last winter, right before all this, for about 5 months. And it was so great to be in the city and be in the city where Sam Boyd, the showrunner and creator of this world, has such close ties there, went to college there, lived his 20s there, really wanted to see the female perspective, which I think is so important right now, seeing female voices and just a story of love.
I loved it. And I wanted to ask you, I mean, everything's up in the air now, of course, but are they going to do another? Is there plans to do another season or?
I mean, it's renewed, but I'm pretty sure it's an anthology. So we'll see what
it's going to be somebody else. Cause I don't want to give away what happens on that show either, but you might not be in the next, version. No. I got it. And, and this is the interesting thing now when I talk to, I've got a lot of, like I said, I've had Paul Feig was on recently who produced, and it's really weird to talk to people. Cause you normally be like, all right, what are you doing next? And nobody really knows, I mean, I had a couple of things going too on the Hollywood front, and it's like, I don't know. I haven't talked to the producer in 4 months and nobody has any idea. I mean, my manager said, you should start thinking about animation, which is really, because write an animated show, because that might be the only thing we're going to be able to do for the next year.
So do you, I should have looked at more. I know that you write books. Do you write TV as well?
Yeah. I've written, I wrote for Talk Soup. I wrote with, you know, I've done a bunch of stuff. I was a freelance joke writer for SNL, and my book, Living Loaded, got made into a, I wrote the pilot for that, which we made at Fox. I should mention how, can I mention how we know each other?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Sasha, and which I think is such a great part of this is she used to work at Tasting Kitchen, which is a restaurant in Venice, a very great place. And I got to know you because I was a regular there and you were working there. And, and you know, that's, it's hard to explain the joy, and I'm sure you feel the same way. And then I hadn't seen you in a few years. You left for obvious for this, and I hadn't seen you in a few years. And I'm watching Love Life and there you are. And I was like, oh my God. And it's hard to describe that feeling if you don't live in Hollywood and you don't know what it's like. I mean, you would work such long hours at Tasting Kitchen. Yeah. You were always there. And then meanwhile, you got this whole other life where you're busting your ass and going to auditions and all the rejection and hardship that comes with that. And then to see you on HBO, I went, God damn, that was so happy. I texted you immediately. Yeah.
I mean, I'll tell you, it's a longer road than that. I actually left Tasting Kitchen for a job at Oprah Winfrey Network working in integrated marketing because I was like, okay, I'm done with acting. I'm tired. I took a break. I worked like a real job for a year, year and a half, but I kept getting, you know, calls or an email from different casting directors here and there being like, well, will you come in for this? Will you come in for this? They didn't have an agent. And I booked some small part and I was like, okay, let me get back into acting and see if like now's the time. So I got an agent and I was going on auditions. And then it was like, it's like the moment that you don't put the pressure on it, you know, or like don't care so much, things start to unfold. I booked a small part in a movie with Brad Pitt.
Ad Astra.
Sadly got cut, but that movie was amazing experience. Brad is like, he's the nicest person on that level that I feel like I've ever met. He was
have I met Brad Pitt? I don't know if I have. I don't think I have. Would you? Oh my God. Actually, I did. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't say meet Brad Pitt. I was going to ask you, but I already know the answer because I went when Chris Cornell died, the singer, Chris Cornell, they did a big concert at the Forum. And I was, and I was there and I, you know, we had the like sort of the VIP situation going and a guy literally bumped into me. And so, sorry, man. And then I turned and he said, have you seen a guy with long hair? And I kind of got like, it was like I got hit by lightning because Brad Pitt's so good looking, right? You know, it was him. It was Brad Pitt. And I went, I don't know. And he's like, oh, there he is. Thanks, man. And I was just like, oh my God. And the worst, the part of this story that's there, my girlfriend at the time, her favorite movie is Fight Club. And she loves Brad Pitt. And we had we were not having a fight, but we were in an area and she wanted to stand in a different area. And I said, well, go over there then. I go, I don't want to be over there. It's too crowded. And she goes, fine, I'll go over there. And she went over and she was talking to some woman. And that's when Brad Pitt bumped into me. And she came back and I said, hey, I told her, I said, you just missed Brad Pitt. And she looked like she was going to cry. So I lied and said, I'm joking. I said, he's not real. It wasn't him. It wasn't Brad Pitt. She's like, oh my God, thank God. Then we go in and about an hour into the concert, Brad Pitt walks on stage to introduce one of the bands that was playing. And she's like, he is here. I'm like, I'm sorry. You missed him.
I would have died. I would have also kicked myself 5 times.
But you got to hang with Brad Pitt on this or?
Yeah. I mean, the first day we all were taking pictures because I was one of the astronauts my scene that didn't make it was I was sending him this message from the spaceship that he has left or whatever. And it's this long message from the team or whatnot. But we had all these little picture things to do of like the astronaut team. So the first day I go, we're doing this picture thing and everyone's quiet because nobody knows, you know, what to say to Brad Pitt. Like, what do you say? And all of a sudden we're just sitting there and he's like, so you guys like Game of Thrones? And then we just started rolling. And I mean, he's so like vibrant and nice. When we're all hanging out on set, our set had like a rec room or whatever, where we were working. He came over and was just like playing darts with us and whatnot. And he just, I mean, he said such kind words. There was one day where he came up, I had done like 13 different takes of something. And he was one of the producers on this. And he was like, I watched all your takes. Like, you're really good. And I was just like, thank you. I'm like nothing came out of my mouth. And he was just like, all
right. So let me ask you a question. You grew up in Detroit, right?
Yeah.
And where are your parents from?
They're from Haiti, both of them.
Both from Haiti. Yeah. So you're first generation here, grew up in Detroit. Yeah. Detroit's a tough area. I grew up in Philly. I know what that's like. Yeah. In your wildest dreams, when you were in Detroit, did you ever imagine you'd be kicking it, shooting darts with Brad Pitt and he'd tell you how good you are?
Yeah, I was a very ambitious kid. No, honestly, no. If I asked my five-year-old self, like, if I thought I would be on set with Brad Pitt, like, no, my brain could not wrap itself around it. Like, I feel like it was just enough to, like, leave, you know, just to get out and move somewhere else. It's wild.
But it's got to be validation. I mean, you talked about wanting to give it up and quit and go get a real job. That must have been an incredible feeling to have, you know, one of the biggest movie stars of all time and a guy who just won an Oscar and he's an amazing actor look you in the eye and tell you you're really good.
I think that's like when my heart stopped and I was like, okay, like this is it. This is the path I'm supposed to be taking. You know, I should be doing this and it's never not gonna be hard is like what I personally learned just along the way. And you know, you meet different people. I've met, you know, and worked with Steve Buscemi and Daniel Radcliffe and now Anna Kendrick and Brad Pitt and all these amazing people and Niecy Nash and Courtney B. Vance. And it's just, it's a part of the job. You know, it's always going to be a struggle for all the one parts you're going to get here and there. There's 1,000 that you don't get or whatever, and you just kind of roll on the roll. So
I want to take a quick interlude from talking about your career, but I want to get back to that because it's amazing. But let's talk a bit about these wines. So I want to know. So again, this is a 2019 Sauvignon Blanc, got a 90-point rating from Wine Spectator. Well, Sauvignon Blanc is the signature wine of New Zealand, okay? Well, Sauvignon Blanc and Pinot Noir, and we're going to try some Pinot Noir in a little bit, too. This one's from Marlborough. The grapes are Love Blocks. They've got a vineyard there. It's certified organic, which I think is important to me, anyway, and I'm sure it's important to you. But this is a really vibrant Sauvignon Blanc, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I mean, it has this... I wish I remembered all my like tasting note terms, but when I taste it at first, it has this like light effervescence almost. And it's got this, it's like a mineral wine. It tastes like.
Absolutely.
Mineral.
Absolutely. It's got that sort of linear acidity to it that goes through. It really keeps it balanced. But I also got a bit of like a creamy mouthfeel on this thing too.
Yeah. It's definitely fuller mouthfeel, not too thin. Ooh, that came back. That whole terminology, not too thin.
Right, you're getting there. We might have to make you our resident wine expert on the show.
I used to sell wine like nobody's business.
Well, but when at Tasting Kitchen, I mean, that place is a serious wine. That is a serious wine collection. Yeah,
that wine list is so impressive. And when Yvonne took over, especially, I mean, both Francois back in the day, and then now I guess Yvonne imports such amazing wines from Italy. From you know, vendors who only sell in small batches, so you're really getting some special wines over there. I miss it personally,
and I miss you being there because you're right around the corner. You're right around the corner. I could come see you whenever I want. Now you talk about wine. I got some terms here. I want to test you since you were in in Uncorked. So I pulled out my book, American Wino.
I did not.
If American Wino ever gets made, we're putting you in this movie now because you were in Uncorked. All right, I'm going to give you some wine production, basic terms about wine production, and you tell me what they mean, okay?
We're going to see how...
All right, here we go. Blending.
Like blending the grapes together?
That's the act of mixing the wine.
Yeah. Yes.
Bottling. Bottling.
Well, the act of bottling the wine.
That's the act of putting the wine into a glass container. Yes. See, it was easy. We're starting off easy here. Okay.
Yeah.
Cold stabilization.
I don't know.
I think this is what they do to Coors Light. I think this is what they do to Coors Light to make it taste like corn-fed water. That's cold stabilization. All right. Cold play.
A band.
That's the act behind such hits as Yellow and Clocks. All right. Yeah. Sorry. You got it. Yeah. De-stemming.
The act of taking the stem off of a grape.
That's one way of putting it. I described it in the book as the savage neutering of grapes. Don't think they won't come for you. Okay.
Should I own these terms?
No, it's a joke.
I'm really kidding.
Filtering?
I used to know.
It's just filtering. It's just filtering the wine. Yeah,
filter, fine. Yeah. Like through a filter.
Okay. I can't do this. Maceration. Maceration.
Sugar. Macerating wine. Like you smash it and release some sugar.
Well, in the book, I described it as the pleasuring yourself to thoughts of Pinot Noir. That's maceration.
What?
Pressing. No. Okay. By the way, I'm reading this. By the way, this book, American Wino, came out 4 years ago, and I'm reading stuff now going, oh my God, like how much the world's changed. There's so much. I'm reading this and going, I can't say that now. Like, I'm going to get canceled. I'm going to get canceled if I say that. Like, so there's a term in wine called pump over, and I wrote doing it missionary style, that's not enough to cancel me, but
not bad in today's world.
Well, then racking, tell me if this would get me canceled. So I said, pump over is doing it missionary style. And then racking, which is a real wine term, racking, it says an area you can hold on to while doing it missionary style. That's not bad, is it?
Yeah.
Come on.
In today's world, that would get you. Yes, correct.
Well, then I also put skin contact, which is a term in wine. Skin contact says that thing that the HR department called you in about. Okay, there we go. All right. And Solera. What is Solera?
Solera is a person. Solera walked into a bar.
It's either the title of a George Clooney movie or something you put on pasta. That's what I have in the book. All right, let's try a different one. Let's try a different set of terms. How about wine aromas? Aromas. You were in the film Uncorked. Where your boyfriend in the movie played a master sommelier candidate.
Yes.
So you should know these things.
He learned so much. I took a break. I drank so much.
Mm-hmm. All right. We'll have some more of that wine. And let's, all right, here we go. I'm going to throw out some wine terms. Well, I'll just tell you the wine terms. You don't have to guess these. So there's one you'll hear, and this is an actual term people use, baby diaper. Have you ever heard this?
No.
Oh yeah. People say they smells like baby. These are real wine terms. Baby diaper.
And do you think smells like baby diaper? Like a deep red?
No. As I wrote in the book, a scent common to Chardonnay from Burgundy, where the delicate poo of French infants is often added to oak barrels during aging. It's a true story.
That is intense.
It's true, yeah.
That's actually very, that's...
Yeah.
That's great.
Let's see. Diesel? You get diesel? You ever get that? People, I'll get a diesel smell.
I have gotten that.
You've heard that, right? Have you smelled diesel before when you've smelled wine?
I've heard other people say that they smell diesel. It's not the first thing I think of, but I have heard that. I've heard people say, oh, I get a little bit of like
diesel,
oil,
yeah.
Licorice.
Well, I described it as a petrol-like aroma often found in Rieslings from Australia and American street racing movie franchises, also known as Levin Diesel.
Oh my God.
This is why I get paid all the money for the comedy.
Claws are like...
yeah. Pencil lead. You've heard that, right? Pencil lead to describe a wine. It's commonly associated with the red wines of Bordeaux. It's the number two most familiar wine scent in the world. Do you get that?
Really?
No, do you get that?
Oh, I get it. Number two.
Come on. Sasha, stay with me here on this. Come on. All right.
They're just too good, man. They're just too good.
rotten egg is redolent of that goddamn low-life brother-in-law of yours. Dirty dishcloth. Have you ever gotten dirty dishcloth about wine?
No.
I wrote,
for what?
Next time, try using a clean glass. Wet cardboard? Have you gotten wet cardboard?
No.
Oh. It's the UPS. The UPS guy dropped the box with your wine club delivery again. Come on, this is funny stuff.
Keep going. It's wild.
Then you got wet dog. You got wet cardboard. The UPS guy dropped the box with your wine club delivery again. Then wet dog. Was he dropped it on top of your poor Shih Tzu? Oh, no.
Oh.
Damn it. And then you got biscuity. Biscuity is like the treats you used to give your poor dead wine crushed Shih Tzu. All right.
So, okay. We've got that could be a mix of baby diaper, shit something, and wet dog. You know what I mean?
All right. We're gonna do one more. This is a section of the book called The Vocabulary of the Vineyard. But before we do this, I'm gonna jump over to red wine. How do you feel about this? Do you want to try some red?
Yeah.
All right.
We've
got some red also from Love Block, and this is the 2018 Pinot Noir. Folks, this one got a 93-point score from Wine Spectator, and that's no joke. They don't hand out 93s. By the way, if you're wondering I'm drinking wine. The Sauvignon Blanc is $23. The Love Block 2019 Sauvignon, $23. This 2018 Pinot Noir is $32. And you have yours handy, Sasha?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. Let's pour some of that. Oh, man, that looks good.
How do you take your Pinot Noir? Some people have differing opinions on chilled or not.
You could put a little chill on it. You could put it in the fridge for a little bit. I don't personally do that. I mean, I keep it chilled. I keep it chilled to about 55 degrees in my wine fridge.
Mm-hmm.
And then I took it out, and that's where I got it right now. So,
okay.
Yeah.
I put mine in the fridge for a little bit, and then I took it out and let it rest. No,
you know what? There's no shame in that game. All right. So, before we get into that wine, though, this is the vocabulary of the vineyard. I'm going to throw out some terms, and you tell me what they mean. But first, let's cheers with this red wine. Cha-ching.
Cheers. Looking at the legs.
Ching. That's a nice looking wine. All right.
Okay. Mm.
That's delicious too, isn't it?
Well, that's nice. It's juicy.
God damn. This one's from Central Otago, which is the world's southernmost wine region. And it's also the highest wine appellation in New Zealand. So what that means is like during the height of the growing season there, the vineyards can get up to 18 hours of sunlight, right? It's an ideal growing region for Pinot Noir. And as I said, Sauvignon Blanc and Pinot Noir are the two cornerstones of New Zealand wines. Again, their vineyard there, it's called Someone's Darling. And it's 100% estate grown wine, sustainable. Kim Crawford, you've heard of Kim Crawford? Kim Crawford what? Wines? Yeah. Kim Crawford is the, this is the winemaker. He makes this wine, Kim Crawford. It's 100% Pinot Noir. Now look, we're not supposed to be talking about this wine yet. We're going to get back into that. Hold on. Don't get me off. I'm blaming you, Sasha.
So sorry. I'm distracting.
All right. I think you're worried about taking this little quiz here.
I'll take the test? No, I'm ready. I'm ready.
All right. Vocabulary of the vineyard. Here we go. Terroir. What does that mean? Terroir.
That's like the ground that it grows on.
All right, we'll give you that.
I don't.
No, we'll give you that. I got it. I have it down as the supercilious asshole word for dirt. Okay.
Your terms are so much more defined.
Well, I wrote a book. I mean, you know, it's in the book. I'm reading it out of the book. I'm asking you to do this right off the cuff, and that's not fair. But okay, downy mildew.
Downy mildew, like the mold around the wine.
Okay. Top? Yeah. Okay. Well, it's a highly destructive disease that attacks all parts of the vine and can result in severe crop loss. As mildews go, it's the quicker picker upper.
Oh my God. Oh my God. You're hot.
Okay. Aspersion. This is a real term about in the vineyard. Aspersion. What does aspersion mean?
Aspersion. starts with an E?
A-S-P-E-R-S-I-O-N. Aspersion.
I'm going to take a pass.
It's a technique in which water sprinklers are used to protect budding vines from late spring frosts. Centuries ago, the French, who pioneered this technique, would in fact hurl insults at the grapes to toughen them up, which is where the phrases thick skin, cast aspersions, and the French are dicks originated. There you go.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm gonna use this test on Mamadou one day and see what's retained from the film.
I haven't looked to see what I've written about this, but I feel like this is going to be one of those ones that could get me in trouble. This is a real white. This is a weird, real vineyard term.
Go for it. Why are you laughing?
Oh, let me take a sip of wine before I say it.
It's a good one.
Here we go. The term is bush training.
Oh no.
Bush training. What does bush training mean in the vineyard?
I'm going to say it's when you use like a trellis to train the bushes to grow in a certain way.
Holy shit. Okay, wait. This is exactly what I wrote in the book. A term that sounds like the punchline to an off-color joke, but in actuality is a growing system where vines are kept individually and not supported by trellises. Close.
Okay.
But close.
You really led me on a journey there because I thought I had it.
But you threw in trellises, so I you get points for that. All right. So this one is another wine term from the vineyard, emasculation.
Are you kidding?
Emasculate? It's a real term, emasculation. What does that mean in the vineyard?
Cutting things. Your emotions are really helping me out.
It says the removal of the male parts of a hermaphroditic grapevine flower in order to prevent self-pollination. As a daily self-pollinator, that's me, daily self-pollinator, this is yet another reason I'm glad I'm not a grapevine. There we go. Especially,
you know, that's what I was going to say. Yeah.
You know what else is emasculation? Every time I asked Sasha out in Tasting Kitchen, I was completely emasculated. All right, but well, we won't go there.
Just a strong woman.
Leeching. Does the term leeching mean? Sasha Compare, star of Uncorked wine movie.
Leeching. Again, Mamadou Achi playing the sommelier. leeching, sticking on, sucking on. That's not PC. Sticking to something.
All right.
Sticking
to something. A process of barrel production during which tannins are deliberately removed from the wood by steaming. Also a process of taking advantage of wine producers across America by promising them glowing coverage in your book in exchange for first-class lodging, expensive meals, and an endless supply of strong drink.
I wonder who did that.
I don't know. I don't know. All right, we're getting close to the end. I know you want to keep going with this, but
I'll keep going.
Phylloxera. Very famous term. What's phylloxera?
It's for locks. And
Phylloxera is a minuscule insect capable of bringing the wine industry to its knees. Phylloxera invades the vines and kills. It wipes everything out. Yeah, it's a, yeah. What is verison?
Something green and... It's the leaves of the grapevines. It's the vines of the grapes.
It's the onset of ripening.
Yes. Are these on the psalm exam? Do psalms have to know this?
Some of these. So verison is on there. Now, what about Verizon?
That's a cellular network.
That's the iPhone autocorrect for the wine term for the onset of ripening. Yeah.
No way. Yeah. Is it really?
Yes. Oh. And finally, the final term, this should be a no-brainer for you. Vintage. Okay. Vintage.
The year that the grapes are, that they're picked or that they're bottled. One of the two. I do know that. And it's a label. It's on the bottle. It'll tell you.
Okay. Well, I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to give it to you straight right now. Vintage is wine made from grapes that were all or primarily grown and harvested in a single specified year. It's also my fourth favorite porn category behind emasculation, bush training, and downy mildew.
That's how you bring it home. That's
boom.
How you bring it home.
Right? Man, right. If I had a hi hat right now, I'd be bum bum. Anyway. You didn't realize you were going to be sitting in on my comedy routine tonight, did you?
I did not, but I enjoyed it.
No, you thought you were coming on here to talk about your career, but no, Dan's comedy routine.
No, this is better. This is good.
But what are you, so what are you doing now?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, how does it work during?
As far as career, there's lots of auditions, I will say that. I'm writing a film as well. So that's been taking up a lot of time and working with my team and with the producer on just the concept is sort of based on my family. So that's been taking up a lot of time, but there's a ton of projects happening in the near future / next year. So we're just gung ho going at it, meeting with producers, directors. I'm on hold for something that I don't want to, you know, jinx, but if it goes, I'll move to Canada in a couple weeks.
Can I come? Can I come with you?
Yeah, come on over.
If you let me just say this, if certain things develop a certain way, and you go there, I'll see you on. If certain things go away, I don't want them to go. I'll see you on November 4th in Canada. I'll be on my way up there.
Oh,
here
God.
I come. Just so people know, listening, on hold. The term on hold when you're an actor is both the most hopeful and probably got to be the most nerve-wracking thing in the world, because that's when they tell... Well, you tell us what being on hold means.
It's basically like, we haven't booked you yet, but we haven't not booked you yet, but also we might go a completely different way. So stay ready, be available, but also we don't know yet. So it's when, you know, producers like you... casting likes you and you're on hold, meaning they may make a last minute decision and book you, but they still have to get approvals from different levels. And you may be testing as well against someone else, especially in this digital era. It's been a lot of virtual things and it's just not quite the same. It's hard to explain, but on hold means you're literally waiting on hold. You're pinned for something.
So when you're on hold, I mean, is there any way to, is it just like a verbal agreement that you're on hold, or do you get paid to be on hold?
It's a verbal agreement. You only get paid if you are already on a contract and they have an option on your contract. And they basically, if they haven't re-optioned your contract by a certain date or said no, like to re-option your contract by a certain date, they technically owe you an episode fee or whatever has been negotiated. They'll pay you until they make their decision past that first like contracted end date or whatever.
Do you think Brad Pitt ever gets put on hold?
I mean, I would you
come
know,
on.
I think at this point he's the guy putting other people on hold.
Yeah, there's no project that Brad Pitt can't have, you know.
Yeah.
Brad
Pitt. He's Brad Pitt.
This is the thing I don't know that people necessarily understand is you can have a piece of material, and I'd like to think that I do. I've had, you know, I've done stuff here, but you can have a great piece of material, and not just me. I have friends that have, what drives the engine in Hollywood isn't necessarily, unless you've, as a creator of content, have reached a certain level. But if you're on the outside scratching to get in and you have a great piece of material, that'll open doors for you. But the real thing, like I can tell you this, I could have a script that 50 people turned down and they all, nope, not for us. And if Brad Pitt said he liked the script, all fucking 50 people, every one of those fucking 50 people that told you they didn't want it would go, no, it's fantastic. We love it. So that real, I mean, actors, certainly are the main, when you hear the term attached, if you have a big, if you have an A-list actor attached, your project's probably going to move forward. And then, yeah. and then there's a good amount of directors that could also move your project forward if they're attached, but getting all the, it's getting the components, you know, the,
yeah. What's crazy is also you can attach someone to a project and then they'll drop out later on, you know? So you can get the funding just by having someone's name attached to it or a director attached to it. And then, you know, they'll part ways once the funding is locked or whatever. And you might have to get someone else to be the big ticket on it. It's a crazy, crazy business.
It's a very funny town because I've got, you know, I have friends that are established actors that I became friends with after they were.
Yeah.
And then I have some friends that have kind of made it, you know, they're doing some stuff. And then, and you find yourself going like, I'm not going to say his name, but one of my good friends, he was on, was the Hulu, High Fidelity with mm-hmm. Zoe Kravitz, the reboot they did. And I was, you know, I'm super happy for him. And actually I'll just say his name, Justin Silver. And Justin's one of my really good friends. And I'm really happy. I'm like, man, dude, I'm so glad. Just like I said, when I saw you on that, yeah. On Love Like, but then there's that little tiny part of you, because again, Justin's one of my best friends that thinks, oh my God, I hope he blows up. Because if your best friend blows up in Hollywood and you're a writer, yes, hey. You're like, dude, because he's already said, he's like, man, I'd love to play you in American Wino. And I'm like, just get bigger. Come on. You can do it.
My best friend is an amazing producer writer and she just got her show. I don't know what you call it in the development world, but like optioned or like, it's not like a production company wants to make it.
So they give her a little bit of money to lock it up for a certain period of time.
I think so. I'm not too sure how it works. Like she has worked so long in that business and she's written for a multitude of shows. And she was like, well, I wrote it for you. And I'm like, what? What? So, you know, yeah, Hollywood can also be a great business where friends can collaborate as well.
That's really what I mean by that. And you know, but it's brutal too. I mean, again, Wino, which I was just reading you from, and that's been in various stages of development. And there have been actors attached or that have been interested in doing this that are, like I'm not going to say their names, but they're actors that are well-known actors. And then they come, the producers or the agents, they come back and you go, yeah, they're not moving the needle.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? One guy in particular, and I, again, won't say his name, but I'm like, he was the lead in a lot of big comedies not that long ago. And I said, and he texted me personally and said, I read the book. I read the screenplay. I love it. I connected with it. I want to do it. And I was like, wow, man, I'm a fan of this guy. And they came back and said, yeah, we dangled it and it's not going to get us what we need to get it done. And which there also comes a part, and I'm sure you've dealt with this too, where you just go, fuck it, I'm going to do it myself.
Yes. You know?
Like really, fuck it. Just we'll raise the money and we'll make the goddamn thing ourselves.
I mean, at this point now, I feel like so many people are looking for, you know, content with the whole drought that we've had basically, that it could be a good time to start shopping it too. But it's so frustrating. How many people are at the top of this industry controlling, you know, the things that go on as far as like who you hire, who writes, who does this, et cetera, et cetera. And I've heard some really terrible stories, things I won't say, but basically, you know, there are people at the top who say things like, oh, well, she's not fuckable. Not to me, to other people. But like, you hear these terrible things.
Has ever said that about you. If they do, I will smack them. You let me know. If anybody tells you that you're not fuckable, I'll knock him out. I will knock him out. Yeah.
Thank you.
I'll get all Philly on him. Well, you're Detroit. We'll go double team. Philly, Detroit.
Black for me that, you know, I take care of myself.
But you're absolutely right. And that is, there's so much ass covering too. And you know that, right?
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I just talked about. Like they all pass because they need that. Because if Brad Pitt does it, and it tanks, then they go, it wasn't my fault. You know, Brad Pitt was in it. But if they take a chance on you, so if your friend writes you a beautiful, movie, and it's an amazing project. And this does happen, and there are those great stories, but they're very rare. Where it's like, okay, you've got a good body of work, but I think we can both agree you're not an A-list. You're not someone that's they're going to go, yeah, we'll give you $10 million. But so you and your, they're going to be like, oh, she's amazing and she's great, and Brad Pitt said she's great, but we're not going to do it because if a movie doesn't work, I'm going to lose my job. So what we'll do is we'll see if Kerry Washington wants to do it. I'm not knocking Kerry Washington, who's great, but if Kerry, it could be the same fucking movie. Everything's the same, but they'll say no. But if Kerry Washington wants to do it, then yes, because then their asses are covered.
That's exactly what it is. And it's wild because you see so many times where there are people miscast and they use the star power to sort of get people's eyes on it or draw an audience in, but then it will get terrible reviews because they haven't done the proper work in casting to find the right person, that's really going to connect to the audience. I think what a lot of studios don't realize is studio and the project creates the star. The star does not, necessarily always make the project better. Because everybody's right for different things. And I'm, not knocking any stars that have been the vehicle to get things made. I think that it's fantastic. They can give other roles, a shot at going to the new person, et cetera, et cetera. But I do think that there's too much leaning on stunt casting, which is when you just cast like a star vehicle, basically, to push a project ahead.
I heard Sean Penn. It was either on Howard Stern or Adam Carolla. It was on one of the shows he was on recently. Mm-hmm. He was talking about when he auditioned for Fast Times.
Mm.
So he had done, what was the movie he did with Tom Cruise? Taps or one of those. He was in one movie that was a pretty good movie, but he didn't have an agent yet or anything. And he went in for Fast Times and he did the audition and he...
Loved that movie, by the way.
And yeah, but I mean, that was the movie that made him, and he said he kind of tanked the audition and he was in the parking lot and one of the casting director team came out and said, "Hey man, we feel like you were on, like, I feel like you're honest. Just come back in and do it again." And made me think of what you said earlier when you don't give a shit. Cause that's what he said. He goes, he had already reconciled in his head that he didn't get the part. And then the guy says, "Just come back in and just try it one more time. Just relax. Just, calm down, relax." And he said he went back in and he was like, "Fuck it. I don't even care." And he did it again and he got the role. And that's it. And now he's Sean Penn. who knows what would have happened if he didn't get that part? Maybe he doesn't have 2 Academy Awards or what,
He would have gotten something else, would have been the thing that made him, because you can't. I mean, Sean Penn is just brilliant. Brilliant. Yeah. But you're right. There is a lot in this business that's about luck and timing. It's lucky that casting director or whoever ran out and asked him to come back again, because if he hadn't, he probably wouldn't have gotten that part. And that movie was so huge for so many people. So
there's something to be said, certainly, about tenacity. For instance, how many years have I thought, man, I'd just like to spend an hour with Sasha Compare?
I knew you were going to go there.
And it took a lot of years, and here we are. We met a long time. We met a while. It's been like 10 years.
It's been like, I think, I've been here for 9. So, yeah, it's almost been 10 years.
You were working at Tasting Kitchen from the beginning when you got here?
Yeah, about like a year after I moved here. So, yeah, I was there for 4 years, too, and then 4 years I've been out.
And again, I can't tell you how happy I was when I was kind of drifting off too. I was laying on my couch tired and I'm watching the show and it was one of those things where I mentioned Howard Stern Howard Stern was talking about how much he loved that show.
Oh my God.
Yeah. That's why I went to it, because I'd listened to Stern that day and he was talking about shows that he's watching during quarantine and he was just raving about Love Life. Oh yeah. He was saying he loved Anna Kendrick and she's so great. And he's like, "I'm obsessed." And so I thought, well, let me try that one. I've watched so many shows. And I was kind of, I wasn't saying I was drifting off because the show was boring me. I was just tired. And then I just was like, what? My eyes kind of went like, blah, 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 blah. Wait a minute. Who's that? I was like, holy shit. And I was by myself, but I was looking around wanting to be like pointing at the team. Look who's there. Look who's on. You know, I actually texted Justin Pike.
Oh my God, how's he doing?
So Justin, just so everybody's home, like, what, are these guys having just a sesh, like a private sesh now? Justin was ran the bar at Tasting Kitchen, and a dear friend of mine, went to his wedding and all that. And I texted him and I was like, dude, did you know Sasha's on the show? God. On HG? He's like, yeah, he knew. He already knew. He'd seen you on there. And he moved back to the East Coast, and he's living in Maryland or something. By the way, I'm giving away Justin Pike's life on my podcast right now. Don't stalk Justin Pike, anybody. Yeah.
You stalk him because he's amazing.
He's a great dude. But he already knew. He'd been watching the show.
Oh my God, that's amazing. Oh God, I miss him and Coco. God, I miss everybody from there. Honestly, that's like a lifetime ago. It almost feels like, but it's such a short time ago in the scheme of, you know, life. It's just things happen so fast. But I want to say back to what you were saying about, right timing or whatnot. Miracle Workers, like short story. I auditioned for that part, and casting immediately said, no, nah, she's not it. And then I think a couple, and at that time, so this is okay. This is just, I want to frame this to how the business works really, because it's all about who's attached and what the vibe of the show is. They said no. And at that time, Owen Wilson was attached to play God. The show is, the first season was about heaven, sort of like heaven being a workplace setting and having these sort of underdog characters. They have to save the world in 2 weeks. And they have to get these two people, myself and John Bass, to kiss in 2 weeks. Or else the world's going to blow up because God is tired of the world. Great log line. So at that time, Owen Wilson was attached to play God, and I went in and auditioned, and they were like, she's not it. And then something happened. Owen, you know, had to back out, and Steve Buscemi came in, and then I got asked to go in again. And when I auditioned, I went to producers as well and got the part. And I remember talking to my showrunner and him being like, oh yeah, we thought of you from the beginning. And then when things changed, it really made more sense. So it's just a...
So like, they didn't see you with Owen Wilson in that part, but Steve Buscemi.
It was a different show, I think, with Owen Wilson. And then with Steve Buscemi, it was like, oh no, this makes sense.
How many seasons did that show get?
It's on its third now. Second season, when the second season was shooting, I was shooting Love Life. So I didn't get to go to Prague, and I was going to do something on that season. But now I think I hope they get renewed for a third, because it's a brilliant show. It's so good. Simon Rich, he also did Man Seeking Woman. And he's a brilliant, you know, writer, and he wrote a ton of short stories, and he wrote Miracle Workers. He had done a short story before, and the name of it is, I think it's called What in the Name of God. His stories are just, they nail it on the head with like what real life is and what the feeling is, but he does it in these surreal worlds and settings and context that just, it's hilarious. It's hilarious. It's brilliant. And Daniel Radcliffe and Steve Buscemi are just...
Oh. I was going to say, they're
bold. Bold. Yeah.
It's bold. Amazing.
Yeah.
It's so good to see you kicking such serious ass. And couldn't happen to a nicer person. Are we enjoying the Pinot Noir, by the way?
It's delicious.
It's a good... It's light. This is a really... I would say this is a sort of a signature New Zealand Pinot Noir. You get that... You know, you get that a lot of black plum flavor, cherry, sweet berries, right?
It's not too tart either. It's like very, I mean, if I'm looking at it right now and it has a very like light red color, it's not one of those deep, super like tannic Pinot Noirs. It has a clear ring around it. And when I taste it, it has nice, like, you know, fruit tones on it. It's not tart, not too tart. The alcohol comes through, I think, as it opens, but...
What's your go-to? I mean, we're all home now. Are you drinking wine? Do you drink whiskey?
Wine. Definitely. I did get a bottle of Elijah Craig for the Love Life premiere, and that has slowly been, you know, just getting a little lower and lower.
Sure.
I love wine, and I love anything that's like a, I like really funky, like orange wines, like the most.
Yeah. Orange wines became a thing in the last couple of years. Let's see.
It's interesting. I don't know too much about them other than a little bit oxidized and more skin contact.
So everybody knows it's not wine made from oranges. A reference to the color. You know what? I don't know if you remember from earlier in the show, we have now made you the official sommelier of what we're drinking with Dan Dunn.
Cool.
Yeah, you're in.
Oh.
You're in. So,
all right.
So now we're going to be doing some future shows with you. So should we do an orange wine show? Let's not give anything away right now. We'll save the orange one. We'll do an orange wine episode coming soon. I've kept you too long. I feel like not really, but but I really do appreciate you coming on, and it's so good to see you.
Good to see you too.
And you're killing it. I want everybody to go and check out Sasha Compare on whether it's Miracle Workers, Love Life, and really watch Uncorked. It's such a good movie. It really is such a great movie.
My favorite. It has so much heart. I cannot thank Prentice Penny enough for his vision, his world, and that whole cast, the whole story. It's brilliant. And if you love wine, you're going to love the movie. So,
and even, you know, don't hold it against Sasha that she didn't know all the wine terms. She's still excellent. She's excellent in the film, you know, but you know, well, you're maybe next time out, maybe I'll bust out some of the other ones from the book. But what else? I think that's it. I want to, you know, where can we find you on the social medias?
I'm on Instagram at Sasha SASHA _ Compare. Google it. You'll find it. That's it. I'm not big on Twitter, and I deleted Facebook. So
lucky you. I'm at the Imbiber, and I'm going to post some little videos of this, whatever we just did here. And, that'll be great. Coming up. Who's coming up? Oh, we got Andy Roddick, tennis legend. Andy Roddick is going to be on the show soon. We've got Jason Aldean, country star Jason Aldean, coming soon. And guess who's coming on? I just found out today. Tease it. Little teaser. Upcoming guest on the show. Pitbull.
What?
I got Pitbull coming on. Yeah. Pitbull's got a tequila. Espinita tequila. He's going to be on here. We're going to be drinking his tequila with Pitbull. Should we have you on? Should I be like, Pitbull, don't mind her. She's just she's our resident sommelier. But she also, we'll have to make you our resident tequila expert.
I do love mezcal, so if he's got a mezcal, I mean...
Do you want to co-host that episode with me, with Pitbull?
Let's do it.
All right. I'm making all kinds of promises. By the way, I've been doing this with Sasha for 8 years. I've been making promises that I have not kept.
There are 20 girls onto the show to host. I get it. Get the game now. Get it. I got it. I'm good.
Oh, it's embarrassing. I feel like we should tell that story, but no, I don't want to make people think any less of me than they already do. But I want to thank everybody out there for listening. Thank you. We got up to, what did we get up to this week? We're killing it. We're doing it. Well, okay. We were number one in Angola. We were number one in Angola for a good solid week. And then I dropped down to number four in Angola. And now I've dropped off the charts in Angola, which apparently only consists of four shows in Angola. Well, we're drinking with Dan Dunn. But we did get to number 15. The other day on the food and drink charts on Apple Podcasts out of, you know, like 10,000 friggin' shows. So thank you to everybody out there for supporting us and making me fabulously wealthy. Joking. Not yet. Sasha Compare, you're the best.
You're the best.
And the rest of you, I like you too. That's all I got.